From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of July, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Total Farm Marketing in Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, we'll take an in-depth look at the weather forecast, not only here in the United States, but across the Northern Hemisphere with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And it'll all happen on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Visit us online at willag.org, just willag.org to click and play our ag programming.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here are the settlement prices from the CME Group in Chicago. September corn 4.5 lower today. Settled at 315.5. That's the old crop. New crop at 326.25 for the December, down 3.75. March down 3 at 338.25. May corn down 3 at 345.75. And July at 352. Down 2.25 in the corn. Soybeans, August contract down 5.25, $8.91.5. The settlement price. November new crop down 2.25 at $8.85.25. That's the harvest month. January, $8.91.5, a penny and 3/4 lower. Next year's July, a quarter higher at $8.99.25. The bean oil futures up 25 cents. The bean meal down $2 for the day. Wheat futures soft red nearby September, up 9.25. Settlement price there at $5.32.75. The hard red September at 445.75, up 9 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in the August of 55 cents higher at $101.45 per 100 pounds. The October at 105 higher, that's at $106 and a nickel. And the feeder cattle at $1.27.5 higher, $141.97.5. The final trade on the day. Lean hogs, August contract down $1.12.5 at $53.07.5. October at $49.82.5, down 90 cents on the afternoon. And the energies trading, the crude oil up 23 cents a barrel. Ethanol futures down 3 cents. And heating oil is a penny and 2/10 of a cent. Higher gasoline on the RBOB at $1.24.2, 2 3/10 of a cent per gallon lower for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up about 85 points. U.S. dollar down 0.397, and gold futures up $7.90 on this Wednesday afternoon. Now let's turn our attention to the commodity markets directly. We are joined by Jackie Vakes. She's from Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. Hey, good afternoon to you. Thank you so much for being with us for this Wednesday, Jackie.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with your usuals for us. We have a series of things we always like to talk about. Where are the support and resistance levels this week?
Well, for September corn, support 296, resistance 350, and short-term crossover is at that 296 level. Long-term crossover is at 212. December, support 325, resistance 355 with the crossover, and that's the crossover is the downtrend line where the downtrend line crosses the uptrend line, and that's at 326.5. And September beans, 892 for support, 930 resistance, crossover is at 867. November beans, 871 support, 891 is resistance, and the crossover is at 882. Dow Jones, 25,230 is support, and 26,888 is resistance. U.S. dollar, we've known, you know, has been dropping quite a bit. 89,60 is now support, and 97,87 is resistance.
What do we know about exports?
Well, it's been kind of interesting. Wheat exports are running 8% ahead of a year ago now. That's up from 5% last week. And the USDA is still forecasting a 2% decrease on the year. Corn 16% behind a year ago. They were 17% last week. USDA is saying 14%, so we're kind of closing in on that. I mean, we have 1 month to go yet. Soybeans are down 4% on the year compared to 2% last week, and USDA is saying 6% decrease for the year. So hopefully we can at least come in there somewhere in the numbers that they're looking at.
And the last time we talked was a couple of weeks ago. What's the managed money say this week?
Well, kind of interesting. You know, on the soft red wheat, they're short 11, and they were short 10,000 last week. Corn, 147,000 short compared to 140, so they added a little bit there. Soybeans, 80,000 long compared to 85 last week. Soy meal, 24 short compared to 30 last week, and soy oil 32 long compared to 25. So you can see that they have lifted some of their short soy meal, added to their soy oil, and reduced some of their net long in the bean market. And on the corn market, they've actually added some short positions.
I'd like to think it's about weather, and usually it's drought when we're talking about that, but maybe not this time around, huh?
No, it doesn't seem to be that way, Todd, as much as there were a lot of people, I think, hoping for just at least a small drought to give them a nice bounce. I mean, you can certainly see the impact on the market since, you know, crop condition ratings increased 3% on Monday night. It certainly doesn't look good. The five states with the highest soil moisture right now are Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, North Dakota, and Louisiana. And the ones with the lowest moisture are Ohio, Michigan, Nebraska, North Carolina, and then there's a three-way tie between Arkansas, Iowa, and Mississippi. I think the biggest concern is probably the Iowa area and just what's going to happen there. We're hearing a lot of different things. A lot of the expectations are now saying, well, 178.5 for corn may not be too far off, like the USDA is saying. And I've even seen some out there saying 51 for beans rather than at 49.8. So it's going to take some continuing good weather. And we, of course, don't really, we won't know until we get that far as to what some of the heat, the extreme heat we did have, how it affected the corn, how it affected the beans. But we can only go by what we have for right now.
You sometimes have trend line yield changes based off what USDA's numbers look like on Monday. Do you have those for us this week?
I do, and this week has been rather interesting. When you looked at corn, last week we had 12.1% acres in the below trend line. 14.6. It's 12.1 this week. Last week we had 34.4 states at trend line, 39.5 this week, and 42.1 above trend line and 39.5 at trend line. So we did have a slip from the above trend line into the at trend line level, but that still says that we have 79% of all the acres at trend line or above. And so that really on corn. When we look at beans, we were at 12.1% below trend line last week, 8% this week, 38.4% at trend line. We're now 42.5% at trend line, and the same as the week before, 44.6 acres above the trend line. So in beans, we're actually talking about 87.1% of all the acres are either at trend line or above trend line for right now. So, you know, it certainly would make you believe that we could have a very big crop.
Early in our conversation, we talked about the export market. There have been a great deal of expectation for the Chinese to continue to take grains and oil seeds from the United States. Of course, there were, 10 days of sales for soybeans. That stopped.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what you think about that and maybe the corn market, too, because they were in for the fourth largest sale ever, I think, in the corn market
right.
at one point earlier in the month.
Well, they've still been buying corn, sorghum, and beans. You know, they took a lot of beans out of the Gulf this last week. The corn sales have been more on the interior part of it. AgriCensus reported that their corn futures hit a five-year high today, and that's on supply concerns and short covering for 2020. So it would kind of give you the feeling that they may continue to be very active when it comes to buying corn. And, you know, you just don't know with them. That's the whole problem that we have. We talk about China protection at times here in the office, and that's what you call put protection, you know, short-term put protection, because you just really don't know what might happen. One of the things that's been a real highlight this week, and it kind of gives me the creeps, Todd, to be honest with you, is USDA and ag officials across the U.S. have issued warnings. I think a lot of people might have heard about this, about unsolicited shipments of foreign seeds and asking people not to plant them. They're saying the mystery seeds appear to have originated in China and could be invasive plant species. Now, CBS News confirmed that residents in all 50 states have now reported receiving suspicious packages of seeds, and many are coming in packages marked jewelry, but they're actually seeds. So, you know, the USDA, and this is what's really important, is urging anyone who receives an unsolicited seed package to contact the State Plant Regulatory Official, or APHIS, and hold on to the seeds, the packaging, including the mailing label, until somebody from the State Department of the Agriculture or APHIS can actually get to you. But do not plant any of these seeds.
Right. Don't plant them. If you get them, just don't plant them. Call a USDA office, wherever that is, and they'll give you directions as to what you should do with those. Other places around the planet that we need to check in on still?
Well, I've got a little bit on Brazil. Their soy acreage looks to be up 4.2% for 2021, which could be 366 million bushels. That's primarily because cotton prices are pretty poor, and it's pretty easy to switch acres over to beans from cotton. They're looking at a possible La Nina, a weak one, but a possible one, which could lead to some very, dry weather. And they won't plant until they get some rain. So corn planting could be delayed, and that could also add to your bean acreage. Corn acreage, they're saying up 2.3% because of the record high corn prices they have. But a lot is going to depend on livestock prices, Todd. If they remain high, then conversion of those old pastures will probably not happen. So this is really something. Now, just think about this in our terms. Completion of BR-163 lowered transportation costs, especially Mato Grosso, by 25% from $1.27 a bushel. Now, that's just transportation, to 94 cents. Now, this next year, as every good government will do, is they're going to turn it into a toll road. And they're going to eat up all the savings and add even more cost. It's just amazing, amazing to me how these guys operate, And so Argentina, we all know Argentina's having a tough time, and their economy is really in a deep contraction. If you look at it from the same month a year earlier, their retail activity is down 20.9%, and restaurants and bars down 74.3%. So this is not only just economic, of course, it's COVID. COVID has hit them very, very hard. And in fact, I read today that they're closing up one of the big factories down there because they've been hit by COVID pretty hard. So things just don't seem to be getting any better in Argentina right now.
Yeah. On that transportation note, Stu Ellis, a good farm broadcaster that lives in the Decatur area, was on Channel 3 and talking with the folks that are working on the Illinois Lock and Dam system. Of course, parts of the river are closed down for either 90 or 120 days. And I was thinking that they were going to open those up sooner than they are. So right now, those look like they're going to be shut down through either October 1st on the 90 or through November 1. On the one, if they have to go to 120. So it'll be interesting to see. Transportation makes a big difference, especially transportation down to the Gulf for us.
And
that changes a huge amount of bases in a big area in Illinois, and it affects much farther ranging than that. So it'll be interesting to see how that all turns out. Hey, thank you so much for all the information today. It's always good to talk to you, Jackie. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vanks is with Total Farm Marketing. She's out of Hollister, Missouri. The Department of Agriculture has released an update to their cattle market investigation. Greg Ibaugh is Under Secretary of Agriculture for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. He spoke with Susan Littlefield of KRVN, that's Rural Radio Network out of Lexington, Nebraska, and explained how they look at the information found.
That analysis as a USDA team and said, what do we have in our toolbox at USDA that we can do that might help mediate what happened during Holcomb and COVID, both kind of different circumstances, and what if Congress and the cattle industry worked together and gave us some different authorities or different expectations, what would be some ideas we could throw out for them to consider to see if we could change some things that would make a difference as well.
For his part, Ibaugh says the report has led to several items they can do proactively.
Their rules and regulations work with small and very small packers, and if they can figure out a way to encourage those packers to have an easier way to approach the marketplace, then that might increase some localized competition. Also, as we see the marketplace change and more interest in e-commerce and direct and local purchasing, is there a way for FSIS to understand those market dynamics and work with them as well? We also can look at some things that we can do in AMS that would allow us to make market information available in a more timely basis as well. And so we're going to start working on some of those adjustments immediately.
Many states are looking into the process of state meat inspector programs, and the undersecretary told Susan Littlefield, it's a complicated subject.
Because while I see the benefit and lots of people see the benefit in states being able to work with small and very small packers more directly than maybe they think the federal government can, but yet it is very important when we approach trade and international trade agreements that we have a federal system in place that regulates it, all of the state as state inspection going into interstate commerce and international commerce, because states don't want to have to have a country like China come in and review their program. We don't want China to have to review 50 programs.
The undersecretary did say they have seen an increase in custom-exempt business requests. He spoke this week during the National Cattlemen's Beef Association summer business meeting. On this Wednesday, let's check the weather forecast now with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks so much for being with us. Good afternoon to you. What do you see in the forecast for the Corn Belt over the next week?
Well, this is going to be an exceptional week. It makes up for the heat that we had earlier this month. We're going to be quite chilly across the region. Temperatures are going to be mostly in the 80s. I think we'll have some upper 70s in a few spots. We're going to still see variable cloud cover in some parts of the region, and we're still going to see some occasional rain and thunderstorms coming and going. It couldn't be a better environment for those crop areas that were stressed out a week or two ago by the lack of moisture and the hot temperatures. So this is perfect rest for the crop, and I think we'll see more normal weather as we go into the second week of August, and that too will likely be beneficial for many areas. Now, of course, we do have some pockets of dryness out there, some of which are more notable than others, and I'm not convinced we're going to see huge changes in those pockets of dryness, but there will probably not be a dramatic increase in that situation either. And since the majority of the Midwest is in pretty good shape, the shower activity that's going to occur over the coming week will maintain that situation. And then in the following week, we'll probably see a little bit of a net drying bias. But our temperatures will definitely not be excessively warm for the next 2 weeks. We'll keep the ridge axis out to the west in the plains or Rocky Mountains, and that's just too far away to make much of an issue.
But does that position of the ridge cause a problem for the Canadian prairies?
Oh, definitely. The ridge is already cut into their weather this week rather dramatically, actually. They haven't had extreme temperatures, but they have had regular highs running in the upper 80s and lower to a few middle 90s, and that is going to continue for them for off and on, I should say, over the next week to 10 days, and there is very little rain in the pipeline. So most of the prairies were in fairly good shape before we entered this period, but there are some locations in Saskatchewan, eastern Saskatchewan, that are hurting from moisture or just got a little bit of relief not too long ago, and they're going to fall right back into some more dryness of significance here in this next week. But most of the prairies, I think the crops are far enough along, at least the early season crops are, that they'll be able to handle this relatively well. Late season crops, flax, and some corn and soybeans could experience enough stress to raise some questions about their performance over the balance of August, and it will be very important that we see timely rainfall come back.
Are there other parts of the world that we should check in on?
You know, we still have a big part of the European and Western Asian continent dealing with some notable areas of dryness. France, of course, has had a very rough summer. The only thing that saves France this year from just a total catastrophe is that it hasn't been hot. And their temperatures have been mild through most of the summer until just the last few days. We've seen a little heat. I guess it was more or less last weekend. It's going to get hot again the next couple of days. But France has seen very little rain this summer. It's just terribly dry. Portions of Germany are also running dry, although it's not as widespread and as big a problem there. Portions of the United Kingdom also a little dry bias. And then you jump down to the southeast corner of Europe in Romania and Bulgaria, some of that lower Danube River basin area. The crops there are also very dry and not likely to see much rain anytime soon. But one of the driest areas in that part of the world is still from eastern Ukraine into Kazakhstan, and extending southward into parts of Russia's southern region. And any of the unirrigated crops in that region are surely to produce poorly this year. It just hasn't been raining, and temperatures are warm every day in the 80s and some lower 90s, and that pattern is not going to break. And there's one more area over that way that is also dealing with dryness, and that's Russia's eastern Newlands. That's an important spring wheat and sunseed production area. They haven't been doing well with rain either. And it looks like part of that region got some relief this week. About a third of the region, I think, is in better shape today. But the rest of the area is probably going to stay drier biased. And there's a new ridge of high pressure that will be present next week that will send the temperatures higher once again. So maybe a little lower yield for both those crops in that part of the world as well.
Can you check in on the Chinese corn and soybean growing regions for me too, please?
Yeah, you know, most of the important corn and soybean areas are in northeast and some east central areas in China. The northeast crop has been in a really good mode most of the year this year. It's been a little wet at times, maybe in a few spots up that way, but not wet enough to create a big issue. Further south, the weather's been much more variable. Some of that Yellow River Basin area and North China Plain have had periods of very dry conditions. They've had some periods of excessive rain and flooding this year. But in general, I think the crops across that region are doing okay. I think it won't be a stellar crop, but it's not going to be a disaster either. So we'll call it average for right now for that area. Maybe a little above average in northeast China if they can get a little better warmth and a little less rain to occur in August. And, of course, further to the south in the minor corn and soybean producing areas, there's been nothing but trouble because of the flooding that has occurred this year. Most of the excessive rains and flooding have finally subsided, and it's cleanup time and time to assess the damage. And we'll hear more and more about that, I think, over these next few weeks.
Hey, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.